This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
At its annual convention in Ottawa this month, the Green Party of Canada voted on two resolutions challenging Israeli apartheid. One supporting the movement for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel, the other questioning the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund. The motion on BDS was brought forward by Dimitri Lascaris. He is justice critic of the shadow cabinet of the Green Party of Canada and a lawyer working in the fields of human rights and environmental law. Dimitri Lascaris was also a co-sponsor of the motion on the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund, and he joins me this morning from London, Ontario. Hello, Dimitri.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Now, the motion that got the most attention in Canada is the one supporting the BDS campaign, so let's start with that one. What motivated you to bring forward that motion?
In the course of the work that I do as a lawyer, I had to go to Israel in May of this year, April and May, in order to interview Eritrean refugees who have an interest in a class action being pursued here against a Vancouver-based company called Nevsun Resources, which is accused of having used forced labor at its only mine in the world situated in Eritrea. And there are a lot of Eritrean refugees in Israel. And on the back end of that trip, when I finished my interviews with the refugees, I went to the West Bank in East Jerusalem because I had seen recently a video, an interview of Gideon Levy, a very well-known Israeli journalist, who said that if you want to see Israeli apartheid in all its gory colors, you have to go to Hebron, the largest city in the West Bank. And so I went to Hebron, and what I saw was unmistakably a system of apartheid. It was quite shocking to me. It had a profound effect on me, and when I returned, we happened to be in the process of submitting resolutions. And I just felt, as a matter of conscience, this was something that I had to do.
How does a resolution get onto the floor at the convention?
Well, first it has to be submitted, and I think the deadline was in late May or early June, for consideration by the members. And there's an online vote, and any member in good standing, someone who's been a member for 30 days, can participate in that vote. And the vote was held in June. And of those who voted, 58.5% voted yes, and 13.5% voted no. The remainder voted for the resolution to go to workshop at the convention. And that means that they approved of the general intent of the resolution, but they thought it could be improved or modified to make it better. So the vast majority of the persons who voted supported the general intent of the motion. This then meant, because under our rules, if it doesn't hit the 60% threshold, it almost inevitably will go to workshop. It did go to workshop, and in a small conference room, you know, anyone who was at the convention, was able to participate, and the people in that room voted overwhelmingly in favor of the resolution. So it then went to the full convention floor, and anyone who was physically present then and who chose to vote could vote. And the vast majority, I would say, well in excess of 60% of those present, voted yes. And the margin was so great that nobody even asked for a hand count.
Was your original motion the one that people voted on at the convention?
Yes. Not one word was modified in workshop.
Okay. I understand that it was actually two different motions, one support for BDS and the other opposition to efforts to criminalize BDS support.
Well, what happened was that was combined into one resolution. It was one resolution from the outset, those two aspects. And then and it emerged from workshop as one resolution. But on the convention floor, there was a motion for them to be split into two separate resolutions. But the substance of both parts was not changed at all. They just became two freestanding resolutions, and both of them passed by a very significant margin.
Now, Green Party leader Elizabeth May spoke in opposition to the motion on BDS. What reasons did she give for doing that?
I think Elizabeth has been quite clear that she feels that this is going to be, it's not going to succeed as a tactic, BDS. I think she has some concerns. She's expressed concerns about endorsing a movement. I have, you know, a different view about that, which I'd be happy to explain. But that is one that she has, a concern. And she's also, I think, concerned by the reaction of Andrew Weaver and the BC Green Party, who have taken a strong stand against this resolution.
Is it true that she didn't condemn people who support it, though, in contrast to both the Liberals and the Conservatives who voted to condemn BDS supporters earlier this year?
Oh, absolutely. Elizabeth May has been quite clear about her opposition to any attempts to demonize, vilify, or deter expressions of support for BDS. She's actually circulating a petition for the rescinding of that resolution, which, quite frankly, I regard as a shameful resolution. The Trudeau government and the hardcore right-wing conservative party combining to, in effect, demonize and vilify people who are concerned and motivated by nothing more than human rights. I mean, we can have a disagreement about whether the tactic will succeed, but nobody should be questioning the motivation of the people who are advocating for BDS. That overwhelmingly, they are simply concerned about human rights.
Now, the other motion concerned the Jewish National Fund. Tell us a little bit more about the Jewish National Fund.
The Jewish National Fund owns 13% of the land in Israel, and it expressly discriminates against Arabs. It does not lease or sell land to non-Jews. And in fact, the Israeli Attorney General some years ago issued an opinion in which he concluded that it was a discriminatory organization. The organization has branches in other countries, including in Canada, and in Canada it enjoys charitable status. And in fact, it engaged in fundraising here, amongst other things, to create something called Canada Park in Israel, which sits on the ruins of three ethnically cleansed Palestinian villages. The representative of the JNF has even stated publicly in Israel that part of its purpose is to, in essence, camouflage ethnic cleansing. So it's clearly complicit in very serious human rights violations. And under Canadian law, it should not have any charitable status at all. It's a travesty that it has had charitable status for years. And so a member of the Jewish community here, Corey Levine, who's based on the West Coast, submitted a resolution calling for the charitable status of the JNF to be revoked.
And that went through the same process, the online vote sent to workshop and emerged onto the floor of the convention?
Yes, and in fact, it got an even higher percentage of support in the online vote than the BDS resolution. It got 61.5%. And emerged from workshop intact without any change to it. On the convention floor, however, an alternative resolution was put up, which essentially cleansed all references to the JNF from the resolution that Corey Levine had submitted. And it simply articulates a principle without identifying any particular organization that human rights violators should not have charitable status under Canadian law.
So I guess that's a disappointment. You were a co-sponsor of that motion, along with a group of other people,
including Elizabeth May. We signed on as co-sponsors at the request of Ms. Levine at the outset of the process. I think it's fair to say, certainly I and Ms. Levine and others who supported it were disappointed by that outcome. Certainly, we completely support the principle that was ultimately adopted, but it's very important to shine a light on who the human rights violators are. As a justice of the Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, once said, the best disinfectant is sunlight. And you have to actually identify them and draw attention to the human rights violators. And that was, I think, a fundamental objective of that resolution.
Now, despite the fact that it changed quite significantly on convention floor, I understand that Elizabeth May is committed to sending a letter to the Canada Revenue Agency asking them to investigate the charitable status of the Jewish National Fund.
Yes, Elizabeth quite rightly made that commitment on the convention floor. I have no doubt whatsoever that she intends to fulfill it. She keeps her word, and I know she feels quite strongly that human rights violators should not have charitable status in Canada, as should we all.
Do we know what kind of effect the BDS campaign is having on the Israeli economy?
Well, it's interesting. I was at the World Social Forum in Montreal a couple of weeks ago, and one of the persons I heard speak was a member of the Knesset, of the legislature in Israel, who talked about and he actually sits on the finance committee of the Knesset, and he supports BDS. And he said, for the time being, it's having a very minimal impact economically, but the impact is growing. It's growing quite rapidly. And the Israeli government is extremely concerned about it and is basically running around Western capitals begging leaders of nations allied to Israel to do whatever they can to stop BDS from spreading. He talked about the symbolic impact of this because it really does draw attention to the quite severe human rights violations that have been ongoing in the occupied territories for decades. So at the current time, I think it has mostly symbolic effect, not a particularly material economic impact, but it has the potential to have a very serious economic impact. And I believe that the government of Netanyahu is quite cognizant of that, and that explains its behavior.
What impact do you think it will have that the Green Party now, the Green Party of Canada, has as an official policy that it supports the BDS campaign?
Well, I think this has opened up a wonderful conversation in politics generally in Canada. I think I strongly believe that the grassroots of the NDP, for example, overwhelmingly support BDS. The leadership is not in sync with the grassroots of the NDP on that issue, and I think as the NDP considers who their next leader is going to be, this issue may very well surface, and we will have given some impetus to that discussion and have demonstrated that a party, including a relatively small one, can take a brave stand in favor of human rights, the human rights of the Palestinian people. Now, there are people, of course, I mentioned Mr. Weaver, who's from the BC Provincial Party. There are people in the Green Movement in Canada who are opposed to this. But I think we're all mature enough and united enough in our core values to conduct this discussion in a civilized manner, in a constructive manner. And that's certainly what I'm going to do in the months ahead as we try to consolidate this victory for the Palestinian people.
Thank you so much for talking to me this morning, Dimitri. It was really good to hear more about this motion.
Thank you, Jane.
I've been speaking with Dimitri Lascaris, justice critic of the shadow cabinet of the Green Party of Canada and sponsor of the motion supporting the boycott, divestment and sanctions campaign against Israel.